Welcome to the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman and sponsored by the Stanford Inn Eco Resort on the Mendocino coast of California. Sid is a certified nutritionist, health coach, and author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, out now on Roundtree Press. Sid is also the programs director at the Stanford Inn's Mendocino Center for Living Well, one of the most holistic and integrated wellness centers in the country. The Approaching the Natural podcast explores all aspects of human health, including nutrition, movement, mindfulness, art, and much more.
Hello and welcome. This is Sid Garza-Hillman. And once again, this is the Approaching the Natural podcast, where each week I talk about my philosophy of health and try to frame health and happiness in a way that is, I think, more common sense, but you might disagree. But hey, listen anyway, and that's how that goes. My philosophy is that the closer we get as a species to what is natural for us by degrees, the better we do in this life of ours, in this crazy modern world in which we live. I am the small step advocate, and you'll hear me visit that if you're just joining me. That's my my way of executing the health and happiness model that I advocate. So with that said, a few quick announcements, as I always do. Hopefully people are happy with a free chapter because they've been downloading it, which is cool. But if you haven't gotten it yet, go to my website, transitioningtohealth.net, and throw in your email address on there, and you get a free download of the first chapter of my book, Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto, that is in stores and online everywhere. With that email address, I don't use it a lot, but now and then you'll get, you know, notifications of the podcast that's out or a blog, or I'll be running some specials at some point soon. So that's that, transitioningtohealth.net. I am a certified nutritionist and health coach. That's what I do for a living, in addition to this podcast, which is sponsored by the Stanford Inn Eco Resort on the Mendocino Coast. And I head up the Stanford Inn's Wellness Center, which is the Mendocino Center for Living Well. So you can find the Stanford Inn at stanfordinn.com and the Wellness Center at livingwellmendocino.com. We've got retreats all year that are on the calendar right now. One that's called the Transitioning to Health Unretreat that I'm running, and you can spend 4 days with me and have a super fun time and really get into this stuff deeply, which is great. And if you go on the website, Living Well Mendocino, you can see a testimonial from somebody who went to the last one and just had a great time. We had a ton of fun. So anyway, if you feel like traveling a bit and doing some, and there's plenty of time to relax and have fun, and you're on the coast and you're on the beach and the whole thing. So it's a really relaxing getaway. And that's how I frame health and happiness anyway. I don't think it should be stressful. In fact, I don't think you can achieve the goals that you want to achieve in a stressful situation, which is what I think diets and all quick fix kind of models can be. Not necessarily, but if they are, then they're undoing the very work that you're trying to do. So, you know, that's how that goes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Sid Garza Hillman. Facebook, Transitioning to Health, although I'm trying to change that to Sid Garza Hillman too. And I do private coaching. So anywhere in the world, literally anywhere in the world. I haven't worked with anybody outside the US, but I can because I work with people all over the United States, even though I'm in this little town. And so if you want to go deeper and that's kind of where you're at that level, and you're like, okay, game on, give me a call. And we'll, if it fits right, we'll roll it out. And it's pretty cool. I'm also a speaker, so I speak to groups. And so if that's something that's interesting to you to have me come speak to your group, then you just let me know. You can email me podcast@transitioningtohealth.net, podcast@transitioningtohealth.net, or on my website, you can see there's a booking email, booking@transitioningtohealth.net, that will get to me as well. So, you know, that's how that goes. So that's all about me and how you can, you know, keep in contact with me, and hopefully you're getting something from this podcast. Ooh, thank you so much to the people who threw a review on iTunes. That was awesome, and it's a way that you can, you know, if you feel like this podcast is hitting you and you want to, you feel the need to do something for me, which, you know, a lot of people do. I don't ask for money, but I do, it would be great if you could throw up a review on anywhere, but Stitcher, iTunes are the best. Hello. A review of the book on Amazon is always helpful too. It just helps spread the word and get people out, more reviews, more attention. You know how it goes. It's a small step revolution that we're all in here, by the way. Everybody listening to this right now, we're in we should be meeting in cellars, because this is all, you know, radical and subversive, because we're bucking the trend of media and the craziness of quick fix and selling us, you know, ad campaigns that aren't really getting us what we are truly looking for, all of us, and that is health and happiness. I believe we are designed to look for those things. So that's where we're doing here. This is the podcast of this. So I did make an espresso when I came upstairs to, I'm at the Stanford Inn now doing this podcast, and was like, I'm sipping espresso during the podcast. Didn't even hit record. It was gone. The thing, here's my problem with espresso, is just so everybody's kind of clear. They're over too fast. I mean, it's really, I love the, that's my thing. I like the taste because it's strong and I don't put any sugar in it. Like it's just, you know, it's just like, phew, I love the strong roast. But man, they're over fast. It's disappointing. So I did bring a little bit of coffee because I might sip on that. I went for a 16-miler run this morning, feeling really good. Training's going great. And it's just kind of how that goes. I haven't even really gotten into the subject of this podcast, but, you know, I kind of speak and I let my mind flow. But one thing that comes up a few times now and then with people and clients especially is this kind of trend that we have that we want to lose weight, or we want to usually lose weight. That's just kind of where we're at in this country, and it's fine. And so we go to the gym and we, you know, essentially beat the crap out of ourselves. I'm going to get into this a little deeper later. But I want to be clear that, and I've said it before, that food accounts for way more of the picture of health and the effect of health. In case you're just joining me, I look at weight management and weight loss and healthy weight as a side effect of health. I think it's a reasonable way to approach weight, because if you just approach weight for weight's sake, you could do something that's just insane, like an Atkins diet kind of high protein thing, which is going to ultimately will kill you. Luckily, people don't stick to diets, thank goodness, because if they stick to Atkins, they'd be where Atkins is. But it's more about food. And when you look at the health of the human body, then you go, okay, well, then I'm going to do something healthy for my body and then enjoy the benefits of that. You know, as in my practice, and hopefully with this podcast, I'm even backing it up one step before that. And I'm going, I'm going to help you take control of your life. And when you take control of your life, the thing of you that is alive, then you enjoy increased health. And then with increased health, you enjoy all the benefits that were sold in diet books, which is decreased inflammation and increased energy and weight management and, you know, healthy skin, healthy hair. Like all those things are great. But if you go to one thing, if you go to, well, I just want healthy skin, then what are you going to do? You're going to buy a bunch of products that you don't need, but you're going to put a bunch of chemicals on your skin that is just horrible for you. Horrible for you. You know, shampoos and conditioners and spend a fortune. You know, everyone goes, oh, it's so expensive to eat healthy. Well, when you eat really healthy food, heavy box, what I call in the book, you don't need products. I mean, you don't need that crap, because think about it. Your skin is part of your body. It's an organ in your body. You don't need to put something on top of it. It's going to be an effect of what's going on inside of you. If you are breaking down, your skin will show that. If you are being, you know, if you're nourishing, your skin will show that, just in the same way that energy is. If you said, I just want more energy, I'm just going to go for more energy, well, then I would say, well, then drink a lot of caffeine or do a line of Coke. I mean, if you're just, it's just about energy for you, then that's going to be what that is. But like a diet, that's short term, it's not healthy, and it's not sustainable. So when you start it from the premise of a healthy body, then all the things come out of that. And I argue ardently that it affects your happiness. So when you start with that healthy body, then even the way you are at work and the way you are in your relationships, I mean, those are affected by that too. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's a real deal. It's a real deal. It's so far beyond, you know, the diet books that are lining those shelves. you know, my book, if anybody doesn't have it, you know, get it. No, I'm just kidding, but not. But it's a small book on purpose because you know what? This is not that complicated. The picture of human health and happiness is not that complicated. It's really not that complicated. It is made complicated. And it's made that way because it sells. And that's fine. But at the point that you decide, you know what, it's time for me to actually do some real stuff here to kind of change my life, then you're going to understand when you're ready. But hopefully this podcast is helping you. But when you're ready, you'll realize that if you don't ease your way in, you will not sustain. If you don't ease your way into behavioral change, you will not sustain. And doing a diet is not behavioral change. It's sexy. I get it. It's sexy. You see results in 12 weeks, but not the results that you're actually wanting and not the results that are sustainable. And that's how it is. I mean, the thing that you have to understand about diets is that most of them keep their promises, but look at what they're promising. They're not promising lifelong change. They're not promising sustained health. They're not promising happiness. They're promising weight loss. That's a just one little teeny part of the puzzle of the human existence, and not even one that's a good goal to have, because when you find your weight, even if you did that with a diet and found your weight, the reason why it's not sustainable is because you haven't done the work of asking yourselves the question, is why were you eating unhealthy in the first place? Why are you overeating in the first place? Get to ask yourself those questions. And I'm going to get into this a little bit because it's about being easy on yourself. It's not like, why didn't you clean your room? It's not like scolding, but it's literally sitting down and going, I'm not going to worry about changing the fact that I overeat right now, because that's just, you know, it's what it is. Or I'm not going to change the fact that I go home and binge on, you know, Twinkies and whatever. But I'd like to know why. You know, why do I do that? What are the circumstances around when I do that? Is it a relationship I'm in? Is it a job that I don't like? Cup of coffee that I love? Just had a sip of a cup of coffee. Those are the questions. I mean, those are the questions that I think are the beginning, starting point of a trek that will lead you to, I guess I hesitate even to say lead you to, because I want to stress again, and if you're just joining this podcast for the first time, I cannot ask you enough to go back and listen to these. They're not in series. Like, it's just, you know, I'm popping out different subjects. They're timeless. They're not like hooked to, in this part of your trek, listen to episode 14. Like, it's not, they're all just, you could start at the first episode, you might want to blow off because it's more like me going, I don't know how to work the microphone. And, you know, and this is what I think could, I don't even want to go back and listen to that one. It's probably horrific. But all the ones after that are, you know, better and worse, and it's fine, whatever. But they're all just kind of dealing with different subjects. So I do recommend you kind of go back and even revisit stuff. But with that said, it's a good idea to ask those questions. You know, in the first place, that's a foundation. And because it's, you know, if you go back and listen to my Power to the Thinkers, it really is ultimately going to be about thinking when you want to make that change. I do want to touch upon, you know, this will kind of set this podcast in a time and date a little bit, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, who died, for those of you who don't know him, and I'd never met him personally, but had great respect for his work. I think he's one of the finest actors we've ever seen. But he died of an OD and apparently an addiction and things like that. And it's a travesty. I mean, honestly, it's a travesty. And I think that's pretty obvious to everybody. With that said, and I'm not here to, I'm not diminishing the weight of what that guy, it kind of hit me in a weird way because he's a year older than I am. You know, you think of these actors as like, they must be 50s, you know, like whatever. And he's like my age, you know? And it's a travesty. This poor guy, you know, like, you know, on the surface, he has it all, right? But you could tell by the way he looks that he's out of balance, unhealthy guy. I mean, I didn't need to know that he was on drugs to know that he had, you know, severe imbalance. But I want to make this point. You know, the news, you know, when somebody like a public figure like that dies from an addiction, you know, the news is all over it. Drug addiction. I did an episode in this podcast that is called The Addiction of Addiction, because we are, most of us, if not all of us, including me, are addicts. And people are dying every day of food addiction. I mean, every day of the effects of food addiction. And yet there's no media attention to that. And I know Philip Seymour Hoffman's a public figure and everyone's like the drug addiction. But I want you to understand through this podcast that food addiction is as serious. And it's almost more serious because, you know, the travesty of him dying means that he didn't get the help he needed. But most people who are food addicts don't get the help they need either. And the reason they don't is because we all got to eat. Like there's a random line that society has set. So it's okay to take prescription drugs, and it's okay to take Tylenol, and it's okay to take, you know, Pepto-Bismol, you know, all drugs. But then, like, if you step over that and you're into painkillers, that's somehow, you know, you've kind of crossed that line. Well, with food, there's no, like, you eat junk food, you go eat fast food. Well, those are highly addictive and totally poisonous things to be putting in your body. I mean, they just are. Like, it's not, they're chemical laden. They're just, it's totally unnatural in the same way that you know, a painkiller is, or that cocaine is. Well, Sid, come on, you can't, you know, food addiction isn't the same as drug addiction, really? I mean, let's look at what people do when they go to food. They go for a distraction. That's the same thing with drugs. They're going for a pleasure center. Same thing with drugs. The food that they're eating has serious physical ramifications on their body and mind. So does drugs. They can't help themselves. They feel powerless against them. Same with food, same with drugs. Their relationships are affected, same with food, same with drugs. Their work is affected, same with both. I mean, to somehow say that those are in different arenas, I think is wrong. And I think that there are levels and degrees in both kinds of addictions. So there's somebody who kind of has a drink now and then, and somebody who drinks every day. To excess, you know, there's certainly a spectrum there, but the same thing exists with food and the same thing exists with drugs. My only point is that it was horrible to hear that news, but I always feel when I hear those things that we're missing an opportunity to draw attention to, and this would never happen, so except for in things like this podcast, where we draw attention to the things that we're battling with as a species in a very unnatural world. I mean, what Philip Seymour Hoffman was going to drugs, I'm assuming, is because there was deep sadness or deep depression or deep whatever issues that he was needed a break from. And he's not alone. I mean, this is our species. We created this world, but now we're suffering the ramifications of living in this very unnatural world. And we are bombarded by things that trip us up. In the pleasure center, that are addictive, and I think it's a healthy thing. You know, the old adage, first step is to admit that you have a problem. I think that if we admit that we have this addiction, that we put that on the table, and realize that that's just what it is. I mean, that's what it is. And once you start with that truth, that honesty, then you start to see the world through that filter, and you start to see maybe the things that you would like to have a little more control over. That you have a little less control over now. There's nothing bad or good. It's like where are you at in your trek? And of course, then I would step in and say, when you decide that there are things you would want to have more control over, well, what am I going to say? I'm going to say take small steps. Because if you go, well, I'm going to craft this kind of Monday through Friday, I'm not going to, you know, this, and I'm going to eat this way, and this is how it's going to be from now on. Well, it's not going to be that way from now on. Because it's too hard to change your life like that. And then you're going to fail, and then you're going to feel crappy about yourself. But if you go from a place of, I'm going to add in, little adjustments here and there, it's all a positive forward momentum. You gain more self-esteem, and you gain more confidence along the way. And it's the value of the journey, like totally. And the value of Journey, the band, is, you know, amazing. Okay. I always have to go, because I don't want you to think that I'm just like checking out for a minute. I'm taking a sip of coffee. Jiminy Christmas. You guys are very demanding. Okay, let's get into this. So what is your mot? Now, do I have to come up with, you know, campy, acronyms? Yeah, once in a while. But I did this time. What does MOT stand for? MOT stands for most of the time. This is a big one for me for a whole host of reasons, but in my private practice and I'll say in this, I've said it in this podcast, but I'll say it again. The level of health that you currently are right now, whoever you are listening to this, okay, is the level of health you are is a result of what you are doing most of the time. Okay. Again, a lot of things that I talk about in this podcast are just kind of a, almost like a mental exercise, but I just want you to kind of think about things and, oh, okay. I want you to look at it like this. Whether you agree with me or not, just take it on, take a look at it. The level of health that you currently are, and I would say the level of happiness. So, you know, when I say health, just hear the happiness too. It's all part of the same thing for me, is determined by what you do most of the time. M-O-T-T, MOT, most of the time. If you are eating light box foods most of the time, if you are stagnant most of the time, or if you don't exercise a lot most of the time, you're going to yield a level of health as that will reflect that. Likewise, if you eat heavy box foods most of the time, if you exercise most of the time, your level of health will reflect that. Now, what I really want to talk about in a way is because in a diet setting, you are creating a most of the time that is essentially all of the time. And that's the extremity of diets. You know, diets don't go, well, just do these things like most of the time. They usually, and I'm sure there's exceptions, but whatever. But usually they say, okay, on Monday, you know, here's day one of your daily, of your plan, of your 12-week plan, and here's the recipes, and you follow, and you literally follow that. And that's not a realistic thing. Now, people's most of the time differ. So that's why I consider the entire picture of us as a species, and really most, what I mean by that is I consider the picture of us as each as individuals, and especially with my health coaching. So what I would do for any of you who wanted to work with me, you know, privately, is I would step in as a nutritionist, and I would say, here's a plan. And I mean, I do that in the beginning of the work, but I don't say follow this. I say, this is a goal for you. Just hold on to that piece of paper. A lot of clients don't ever even get there because they're going to find a most of the time that suits their whole life. And by whole life, I mean who they socialize with, the family that they spend time with or not, the work that they do, the travel that they do. When you lock somebody into like, well, here's your plan. I mean, this is why I came to this whole philosophy in the first place, why I crafted it, is because people weren't following my plan. And I thought that was my failure. And it was in this sense that it was unrealistic for me to expect it in the first place. Why would I expect somebody to follow a plan that's a diet? And I already knew when I started that 95% of diets fail. But I thought, well, I'm working with them one-on-one and I'm explaining to them very clearly about, you know, what, you know, healthy food is. And so I'm giving this plan and they came to me with all these problems and I crafted this thing that I figured would work for them. And I would take into consideration their lifestyle, but they still wouldn't follow it. Because why? Because they weren't ready and coached and shepherded through the process of actually incorporating lifelong change. So what I'm handing them is a sense, a goal, but they may not ever get there. And it doesn't actually even matter because if they start taking steps in that direction, then they will find a balance that yields them the health and happiness they like in the context of their lives. And that's what I want to kind of address in the context of your life. If your life is that you are a professional triathlete, well, your most of the time is going to be, you know, maybe more of the time than somebody who just, you know, kind of is not a professional athlete. You know what I mean? Like just working and kind of doing their normal thing. Like my most of the time, for instance, is not all of the time because, you know, on weekends, I tend to, okay, so personally speaking, I tend to during the week, kind of do what works for me in terms of my own level of health. Like I found a balance that I like and I'm running really well. And so all the markers of am I doing well for my body and mind are there. And so during the week, I've kind of crafted a thing that works for me during the week. And on weekends, we usually have a fun night on Saturday with the kids. We do a movie night. We have a special dinner. Now, is that dinner junk food? No, it's not. Is it in my plan, my personal kind of thing I crafted? No, neither. Do I eat a little more than I usually do? Yeah, because it's like more kind of that kind of thing. Like it's a special whatever dinner we do. But my most of the time, again, sets so that I have room for those kinds of things. Now, if I were somehow sick or if I, you know, weren't running well, then I would maybe move my, I would do either one of two things. I would go, well, this, the running that I'm doing 50 miles a week is, you know, breaking me down. So I would probably decrease the running. I mean, that's just for me. I would probably decrease the running and go, look, I, for whatever reason, this is not working for me. And I still want to maintain that fun thing that we do on Saturdays. And we usually have a big breakfast on Sunday mornings. And I really like that. I look forward to that. That's my life. I love doing that with my kids and we all are part of the dinner and it's just really fun. It's like the family time. I don't want to give that up given my life. I would rather decrease the running. Now, right now, my running is dialed in and my diet's dialed in. So I'm not looking to change my, you know, weight's dialed in, like all those things. I'm not looking to change those things. But if I had to, I would look at all those things. I mean, I would look at everything. I would look at the amount of sleep I'm getting. I would look at the relationships I have. I would, you know, kind of assess that. So it's what you do most of the time. Now, if I were, you know, like I said, a professional triathlete, or, you know, you know, I go come back to this like fruitarian thing. You know, a lot of those people are fruitarians because for whatever reason that works for them. Like that's what they do all the time because they're usually doing amazing things physically. Like Michael Arnstein's running 100-mile races. Well, it works for him. And for him, he weighed it out and I'm assuming, and he's happy as a result of it. If he's not, I would say, well, then you should change if you're not happy. But it's what you do most of the time. And when you come at life that way and not with a fix, like, well, what's most of the time, Sid? Is it 62%? Yes. I need you to measure out what you do 62% of the time. See how we get into the diet. See how we get into the kind of the diet. That's like, well, how much calcium should I take? 1,200 milligrams. So I better get that pill because I'm sure that if I take a 1,200 milligram pill of calcium, I'm sure that I'm getting all 1,200 milligrams for sure. And it's really safe that I can know exactly the amount of calcium. Nobody wants to hear, just eat, you know, enough food of heavy box food that you're not hungry anymore and you'll get all the calcium you need. I mean, that's why I haven't, you know, why I don't have brittle bones and why I don't measure what count or weigh anything. And I haven't for 10 years is because I eat mostly heavy box foods and I eat until I'm not hungry anymore. And it's like I said, my diet, the diet portion of my book's one chapter. You want to know why? Because it ain't that complicated. You know, everybody wants to know, well, what do I, if you, the heavier box foods you eat, the less you have to think about food. If you came to me and said, I'm just going to eat junk food, I'd say, well, take a multivitamin. I mean, you know, if you're not going to change the food you eat, then take a multivitamin. Do I think multivitamins are useful? No, I think they're totally not useful at all. But that's what I would say to you. I would also not charge you because I wouldn't be giving you advice that I stand behind. But I would also say, you know, when you take into consideration things beyond food and things beyond weight and things that are really talked about the quality of life, then you know, I would hopefully try to convince you to take on some real action because it would make you feel really good. One of the things I do with my clients is, and I just want to throw this out there because if you guys want to take this on, you can take it on, is I ask them to do you know what? I'm going to wait to get to that. Okay. So one thing I wanted to, I wanted to say this thing too, that if we weren't bombarded by the quick fix diet mentality kind of model that we're just, you know, it's ad driven, then imagine if we didn't have any of those books, there's not on the shelf. And somebody said to me, well, I want to get healthier. And I'd say, okay, well, what if I told you guys it would take about 1 to 2 years to kind of establish a new level of health? And I'm just throwing that out there. Don't take notes on that. Okay. This is a hypothetical. But what if I told you, it takes a year. It takes a year. You want to set a new bar of health, a new foundation? It takes a year. I don't think anybody would have a gripe about that because they would understand that. I mean, they would just, either they believe me or not, but if that was sort of the conventional wisdom, it's like, oh, okay, that's just what that does. And then you might have a better chance of actually doing that. Well, I'm going to spend that year and I really want to kind of do this. I want to be healthy and everything else. But the problem is that we're always up, we being people who are realistic about health and happiness, up against the quick fix models. And so we are saying that it takes 1-2 years or whatever, how much time it takes, but it's a long-term thing. And we're up against this short-term message. But if you really look at the message, what I'm saying is 1-2 years is a basis of creating a new basis and a new bar, higher bar of health and happiness. I'm not saying it takes 1-2 years to get to a healthy weight or to get to, sorry, to your goal weight or whatever that is. Because you can do that fast by getting on the Atkins diet, something that'll kill you, like a high protein, you know, the craziness of that. You can do that. But we're not talking about the same thing. That's apples and oranges. I'm not promising you that. They're promising you that because that's all that they can deliver. They can't deliver you health and happiness. Just can't do it. It's not possible. So I've been reading this book called Running with the Mind of Meditation. I just started reading it. It's a really, really good book. I don't plug stuff here, but you know, if you wanted to look for it, do it. I'm not attached to it financially in any way. Running with the Mind of Meditation is a really good book. But he talks about, you know, he became a marathoner. He's like a Tibetan monk and he's a marathoner. And he, you know, his coaches told him basically 1-2 years to establish like a good basis of running, like to establish to build your new base. Well, I don't think actually most people would have trouble with that, even in the modern world with all the diet books, because I haven't seen any. And if you have, write me an email. But I haven't seen any running books that say, you know, 7-day running cleanse. You know, where in 7 days you can, you know, achieve some amazing amount of fitness level running. You know, 10 miles, learn how to run. You can run 10 miles after 7 days. You know, 3 months to a marathon. I mean, or, you know, 3 months to some, you know, marathon in 3 hours in 3 months, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's a long-term process. Nobody questions that because running is running. There's no way, there are physical limitations, or I don't want to say limitations, there's physical realities to training your body to run that distance. And it physically, there are just the design of our bodies are going to dictate that it's going to take you, if, depending on where you start, a good 6 months minimum. And that's if you're already running, to run a marathon without the chance of like injury, to do it in like a healthy way. I mean, that's just a reality. But when it comes to food or weight loss, we go, well, we got to be able to do that much faster. I mean, a cleanse, that's going to lose weight. A cleanse doesn't, you don't really lose fat that much. I mean, you're not losing, even if you do a cleanse, like you're not losing 10 pounds, that's 35,000 calories of pure fat that you think you're losing in that 10 days. No, you're not. I'm sorry. That's why you gain it back. It's not realistic. But somehow in that food realm, and not to mention the fact that you don't keep off anything that you lose anyway, because you haven't learned the behaviors. But in the food realm, we go, well, wait, it's got to be faster. Well, why? Why? Why should it be faster? If we're making physical changes to our bodies that are real, like training for a marathon, why do we think that that should be somehow fast with regards to food, but not with regards to fitness? You know, lift 300 pounds in 10 days. It ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. Just like, you know, lose and keep off. Notice how diets don't say lose and keep off 50 pounds. They don't say that. They just go lose 50 pounds or lose 10 pounds or whatever. And I think, I was thinking about it, like, in a way, like our poor bodies are just going, hey, I have been taking care of the business for you. I move you around. I get you to work. I allow you to see stuff that you're doing and taste stuff and listen. And you can kind of like, you know, figure out math problems. And what are you putting in me as thanks? Is that what I'm, because I don't understand why you're treating me this way. I'm totally serving you in the way that I'm serving you. And what you're doing is putting stuff in me that's making the brain happy. This is the body talking still. My body's British. If the brain, you're putting stuff in me that's making the brain happy, but you know what? The brain's got a lot of good stuff already. The brain has movies and DVDs and internet and relationships, and you know, the brain has a lot of stuff that's fun for it. Okay, so why don't you just give the brain, like, entertain it that way? I'm asking you for one thing and one thing only, and that is to give me what I need to do my job better. But instead, I'm doing the best job I can, and you're flooding me with crap that's making it harder for me to do the job that you're asking me to do every day. And then the body's like, you know, I take care of you, I'm doing all these things, and then you take me to the gym, and you put me on a bicycle that doesn't actually go anywhere, and make me pedal like a bat out of hell, watching a screen and listening to somebody yell at me, and you're beating me into submission to make me lose weight that I don't want to lose because I'm holding on to this because you're stressing the crap out of me and you're feeding me crappy food. So why are you doing this to me? Be a little easier on me. The body's still talking. It won't shut up. I don't understand what the problem is. But that's essentially, you know, that's essentially what we're asking our body. It's like our bodies are delivering, man. Our bodies are delivering. They're designed to do the best they can in any circumstance, any situation. And that's what they're doing. And we can make it easier on them or harder on them. But in fact, mostly what we're doing is making it harder on them. Then we're putting in light box food that doesn't have the tools that the bodies need to do well. And then we're beating them crap because we want to lose weight. But instead of changing the diet because of addiction, we go, I'm going to take you to the gym and I'm going to get a workout. We don't think of a light walk as anything. Oh, that's just... that's a waste of my time. That's not a waste of your time. What light walks can have a longer effect on weight loss than anything that you do in the gym that beats the crap out of you for 30 minutes. Why? Because you think when you walk, it's less stress when you walk. What about calorie? Yeah, what about calorie? What about it? I mean, do you think that if you go into the gym and you work out and you lose a few hundred more you burn a few hundred more calories than you would on a light walk, that's sustainable if you don't have the tools and the foundation your body needs to achieve health, which then will achieve long-term weight loss? If you just continue the model of light box foods and beating the crap out of you, you will not lose weight long-term, and you are setting yourself up for injury. I mean, your body, and the reason, in a way, I was looking at it like this just as a way of exercise, but it's in a sense that your body has to learn to trust you, right? Or not. But your body has to learn to trust you. So it's like your body is going, I mean, this is why true health, like true health, the kind that makes you happy and fit and you know, flat stomach, and true health is a long-term prospect, just like training for a marathon. And the reason is because your body's not ready to make adjustments. It's seen it before. It's seen it many times. It's like the kid that misbehaves all the time and says, you know what, this time's going to be different. I'm really going to walk the straight and narrow from now on. And the parents just like, yeah, uh-huh. Let me get back to you on that. I'm not going to hold my breath. The body says, I'm not going to hold my breath. You go, this is going to be different. Body, this is it now. I'm training for a thing, and I got that under my belt, and I'm gonna eat really well from now on. I'm gonna go to the gym every day. I'm set. You're okay. It's gonna be fine. The body goes, yeah, okay. How about you do that for a couple of years, and then I'll start just kind of make real long term. I'm not gonna go out of my way to make any adjustments for you, who've been doing this up and down kind of stuff for a long time. I'm not gonna do it. The body wants to. That was the body saying, I'm not going to do it. The body needs to earn your trust. No, you need to earn your body's trust. That's what made more sense. You need to earn your body's trust. Your body wants to trust you, but it's been burned so many times in the past, in theory, and this is the yo-yo dieting thing, that the body's like, I'm not going to adjust. You stress me out, man. You get me all excited. I have all these expectations that you're going to start to treat me right, and then boom, you nail me again. That's just like it's the misbehaving kid. Mom, I'm gonna be better this time. I promise. I'm gonna do it everything right. Instead of, you know, Mom, I need help. can you help me start to make little changes and help me be aware of the things that I'm doing that are making you unhappy? And we can change together and you can help me through this process. Now that sounds more realistic than a kid making false promises. But we're in a sense making false promises to our body when we go, I promise you this diet's going to be the one. This is going to be the one that's going to work. I'm gonna you know, do this every day, and I'm not going to waver. I mean, this is it. This is it for me. And then the body goes, yeah, boy, I've heard that so many times. I can't even tell you. Can't even tell you. And that's what we're doing day in and day out. And, you know, I've said it before, my best clients come to me like exhausted. They're just like, oh, I can't do it anymore. I've done 1,000 different diets. I've spent $10,000 on books that have laid out plans. And every single one of them, I lost weight. And then every single time I gained the weight back. I mean, you know, and it's exhausting. But the pull of those diets is strong. I mean, it's really strong. And so it's just, don't beat yourself up over it, but be aware that the very pull that you feel to that diet is an addiction. I mean, the very pull you feel to a diet book that makes promises on the cover is an addiction move. It's a high you're getting, that you buy into the idea that your life can change in 12 weeks. If that were true, it would be pretty awesome, wouldn't it? I mean, you could like in 12 weeks or, you know, 10 days or some cleanse, you could have a flat stomach and just literally change your entire life around. It'd be amazing. You know, it would be amazing. But it's fantasy. It's fantasy. So if you want the truth and you want something real and you're over the sexy draw of just BS, then come to me on this podcast or whatever, personally or whatever, because I will give it to you straight. It's less sexy, I understand that, but it is the truth. And when you are ready to play ball as an adult who wants to take care and control of your life and your health and all the things that how you live in the world, how you present in the world, what you do in the world, what you do in your life, what you do with your kids, what you do with your spouse, it all starts with you. And I know it's not sexy. I wish I could give you a cleanse or a 12-day, 15, 21-day, 30-day, whatever, that would truly change your life. It's not going to. It's not going to change your life. And in fact, it's going to potentially cause more damage because you're going to feel like a failure when you don't sustain it. But for 6 months, maybe you sustain it for 6 months. I don't know. And all your, you know, like I've said, all your friends go, oh my God, you look amazing. And you're doing so great. God, it's so great. Well, when you don't do great anymore and you're reliant on your friends for that reason because you haven't done the stuff that, you know, again, when you take small steps for yourself and you act, you build your own confidence and self-esteem. You don't need anybody. You don't need anybody to tell you how great you look or how great you're doing. You don't need it because you're doing it. You're doing it. You're acting every day. You're eating that stalk of celery. And that's for real. And that's why your life changes in such profound ways that a diet can't deliver you, is because you're acting in a way that is attached to thought and attached to value and attached to realistic expectations of yourself. Got it? All right, I want to get into the next subject here. Anyway, in the, you know, most of the time realm, one of the things I do with my clients is I take a sip of coffee. That's not true. See, coffee's a perfect example. Like I do, you know, it's what I do most of the time, right? Well, I do drink coffee, and I make a point to, you know, part of the reason I drink coffee while I do this podcast is to make a point. You know, and I do it when I do my classes. I come down with a cup of coffee and they're like, oh, people like, you know, at the wellness center, like, oh, looking at me like I'm drinking a cup of coffee. Well, I should be having herbal tea, right? Well, I don't freaking like herbal tea. There's one I really like, Gynostem. I think I've recommended it before. You guys should look it up. Dragon Herbs has a really good brand. Again, I don't sell anything, and I'm not attached financially to anything that I recommend. And that's on principle. But if you guys look it up, it's Dragon Herbs. And it's a Gynostemma tea, and that is a tea that I love. And you can Google Gynostemma; it's awesome, and it's on Amazon everywhere else. Again, I make zero financial; I'm not attached. Okay, so it's all objective, impartial stuff. It's just stuff I use and I dig. Gynostemma, Gyno, Stemma. One of the things I have my clients do, so back to the coffee, is you know, part of it is the message, right? The message is, it's what I do most of the time. I'm perfectly healthy. I'll put it this way. I'm as healthy as I want to be, and I drink coffee. Not because I drink coffee, and I drink coffee. I'm as healthy as I want to be, and I drink coffee. If I weren't as healthy as I wanted to be, coffee would be one of the things I would strongly consider reducing or getting rid of fully out of my intake, because it would be one of the things I know would affect me negatively. I know it does affect me negatively, just not negatively enough at this point for me to change. I mean, I really like it. Am I addicted to it? Yeah, for sure. But would I make steps to change that if I felt like it was affecting me negatively? Yes, I would. One of the things I would do would be to go to half calf, you know, half decaf, half regular. I would then try to do a little bit less per day, you know, but I mean like a little, not a cup less. That's a too big of a step for me. But I'd fill the cup a little bit less per day, and I'd work on that for a few days, and then I'd go a little less than that, and I would wean myself off that. First, I would do that because I would want to save my marriage, because I have given up coffee in the past, and my wife is just, she's like, the first day that I'm off coffee, I mean, my God, I'm a nightmare. So she's like, would you just have a freaking, you know, she'd rather me drink coffee. But if I were to do it now, I would ease my way in, because I know better, because I listen to my own podcast. Okay, so back to the clients. What I do with my clients, and I want to throw this task out to you, is I have them, in the beginning of my work with them, I have them write a, it sounds new agey and, you know, whatever. You know what? Don't, you guys be nice to me, okay? I'm out here busting my ass. There's another podcast I listen to where he does his podcasts naked because he feels like he's more honest and open like that. I'm not doing that. Not yet. I have my clients write down on a sheet of paper, in a sense, it's their goals. But what I do with them, where I differ in the way that this is I have them write it in first person. So what I mean is this, not, you know, I'm going to be really healthy. I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to have a really good job. That, you know, I'm going to be a whatever, entertainment lawyer. As if that's a good job. I'm going to, you know, do whatever. I have them write it in first person. So I have them write it, you know, I am healthy. I'm perfectly healthy. I'm as healthy as I want to be. I don't put words in their mouth, by the way, but I'll just say, you know, I'll sort of offer suggestions and then I say go. And I don't even necessarily ask them to see it. Don't need to. I think I referred to this task in the past, so I'm sorry if I'm being redundant. But I want to talk about this as a way of goal setting. I am this weight. I am this healthy. I run this much every day. My relationship with my partner is this way. And we talk about that. That's that question. And the reason why I'm bringing it up now is because in a way it's, you know, if they say I eat healthy food in their write-up, then that's when I step in as a nutritionist. And I go, well, when, you know, this is what it might look like, you know, here's that thing. And I've already given them that plan. But again, it's always like, it's a goal and they may never even get there. I've said that before in this podcast. I want to make this point that just asking yourself who you want to be is, in a way, it's giving yourself finally a voice to be honest about that. Because most people, I think, they don't give themselves the voice of saying, who do I want to be? Like really asking that question, who do I want to be? And when you just ask that question, and if you do it in a thinking way, then there's never like, well, I'm not that now, so I must suck. It's more like, you have the freedom to ask that question. And just the act of asking that question is really liberating. It's like, okay, who, if I had all my druthers, now again, if you have a physical impediment, you know, let's say you have, I don't, you know, who knows, like maybe you do have a genetic thing that prohibits you from running. You know, you have one lung, or you're severely inhibited breathing wise. Well, to say that you run 100 milers in 6 minute pace, not realistic. I mean, I think you can sort of understand the context or the brackets within which you would make your I am statements. But when you establish what you want to be, and you do it in first person and you see what, how that feels when you say, I am perfectly healthy. I weigh this much. I am doing this. It frames your life. And the reason why I do it in present tense is because I think it helps you start thinking like that person. And here's the other point I want to make. I think that that person that you write down is actually you. I think that person is actually you. And here's what I mean by that. If you write down, I am perfectly healthy, I have this job, et cetera, it's all the things I listed before. That is an expression of your values. That is an expression of your values. There's no objective good or bad about this. I want to be very clear about that. There's not objective good or bad. There is conflict and there is not. The conflict that exists, if you said, I'm 200 pounds overweight, I have this job and I have no relationships and I just eat ding-dongs all day and that was your goal and those are the things that you did, I'd say you found it, man. You found your happiness. You know, I would look, I'll be honest, that would be kind of like, I'd be like, let's make sure that this is really what you want because, you know, naturally, nature, this is where I come to the natural design, like your body wasn't designed for ding-dongs. But if you were like, yeah, I know that, but I'm literally like, I couldn't be happy, like this is where I want to be, I'd be like, okay, game on. If you wrote down, I steal things, and you believe that stealing is totally okay, and that's what you do, and there's no conflict for you, then you're going to achieve a level of health that's probably greater than somebody who's in conflict about that. But if you write, I don't steal, and currently you are stealing, there's the conflict. And the reason why when I ask people, clients, to do this task, and it's inevitably things that they're not at the time, there's the conflict. And it's a way for them to look and say, ah, I am this healthy. My stomach is flat. And then they look down and see that their stomach's not flat. I would say your stomach, you are a person who has a flat stomach. You are a person who has a flat stomach. You just got to let that person out. You've got to remove the conflict that somehow the modern world and things external to you are so overwhelming to you that they're making you do things that totally are not who you are. And I just hit the table. It's in a way of looking at that, you go, whoa. Instead of thinking, I can never have a flat stomach, that's just impossible. I can't, you know, it's hard to imagine, right? Because if you've never had a flat stomach, and that's your, I'm just keep coming back to flat stomach, it could be anything. But if you've never had that feeling, it's so hard. I've had this with discussions with clients where I'm like, they're like, it just doesn't seem possible. And then I want to say, it doesn't matter if it doesn't seem possible or not. We're going to get past that because the fact of the matter is you don't have to imagine having a flat stomach to have a flat stomach. You already are the person who has a flat stomach. You got to get that out. All the things that you write on that sheet, you are the person who has the kick-ass job that you love. You're that person already. The reason why you're not happy in your life, if you're not happy or healthy in your life, is because the things that you're doing in your life are in conflict with who you already are. If you're already the person who eats crappy food, then there's no conflict there. You see, I'm looking at it that way, and that's really why I do that thing. It's like you can step into understanding instead of saying this goal is this lofty goal down the road, then saying it's just unattainable because it's just too much. It's too much. It's like overwhelming. But if you say I am this in this writing, not I'm gonna have a flat stomach. Well, then you're gonna go like I'm probably not gonna be able to do that. It's too much. I'm going to be a marathoner. Ugh, the idea of there's no way I can do that. I've never been a good runner. All the messages come up. I wasn't raised running. I never ate good food. I don't even know how to eat good food. But if you say I am perfectly healthy and my skin is really clear and get as specific as you want to get, I would argue that that's you. You just wrote a picture of who you truly are. Then it's like you're taking small steps to just, okay, I'm going to knock that impediment out of the way. I'm going to knock that impediment out of the way. I'm going to knock that little impediment out of the way. I'm going to add in a stalk of celery every day. I'm going to walk down the hallway. I'm going to get back to who I am. Well, you never were that person. You were. That's who you are. That's who you are. And you're going to start to establish your most of the time. You're going to start to establish you're going to change. I'll put it this way, not establish, because you already have a most of the time. It already exists. What you do most of the time is what you do most of the time. it's just what it is, right? I mean, that's what you, whatever you do most of the time, that's how healthy you are right now. That's your level of health is, like I said before, is manifest by what you do most of the time. Straight up, done. When you embark on, when you say, I am this, and there's things in that paragraph that are in conflict with what your most of the time is now, then you can make little adjustments to change your most of the time. Somebody's most of the time might be 99.999% of the time. Somebody's most of the time might be 52% of the time. Doesn't matter. It doesn't. It, all that matters is that you're living in a way that has no, that has minimal conflict with who you truly are. And at that point, you're it. You got it. You got it. And not only that, it changes. It can change. You might hit your balance, and then your life changes. You have a kid. Holy crap! Well, now I don't have. You know, now I'm exhausted, and now I'm this, and now I got to kind of readjust. Or you have to travel for your job. Well, you got to make adjustments for what you do most of the time. And that's how that works. But it doesn't mean that you, when you do that task of writing in your first person and present, that you're somehow, you know, a piece of crap. You're not. You're not. If somebody said, you should do this and you're not doing any of that, that's, or you say that to yourself, then yeah, you can look at yourself like a piece of crap. But if you say, I'm going to write this I am statements in present, and this is who I truly am, and I just got to get, I'm just going to bring, I'm going to let, look at it like this. You're letting that person out. You're letting that person you already are. You're letting that person out. And if you are a person who eats healthy, then that's when you say, what's the smallest step I can do to actually affect that? What's the smallest step I can do to actually become that? And again, I would argue that if you eat one piece of celery a day, you're a person who eats healthy. No argument. You eat healthy food. That's a fact. When you put a stalk of celery in your mouth, you cannot argue against, you will lose an argument with me every single time if you say, I don't eat healthy food. I go, of course you do. You eat a stalk of celery every day. That's healthy food. You eat it. Done. End of story. Winner and checkmate. But you eat healthy food. Now, if you're going to tell me that you're not as healthy as you want to be, then you're going to have to take steps to change what you do most of the time so that what you do most of the time is eat healthy food. It's not that complicated, huh? And it's actually kind of fun, because when you embark on it that way and you don't put yourself into a situation where you're totally overwhelmed, totally inauthentic, a cleanse, a diet, whatever. When you put yourself in the position of inauthentic, when you cheat, because the thing is, the diet that you do, the cleanse, is not who you are. Nobody in their I am statement I've ever worked with says, I am a person who does 10-day cleanses and then gains the weight back, and then does a diet and then gains the weight back and then some, and then does another diet and then gains the weight back and then some. And I'm a person who always looks at for different diets, and I do all of them and I always gain my weight back. I've never seen a person, not one time have I ever seen that. Not once. But I do have plenty of clients who say, I am perfectly healthy. And I spend lots of time with my family. All the real values that you feel come out in that position, in that act. I spend time with my friends. I go out a lot. I travel. I run. I hike. I climb. I go parachuting. I haven't had a client that says parachuting, but in theory. Nobody says, I go from self-help book to self-help book. I go from personal trainer to personal trainer. I go from gym membership to gym membership. I buy a ton of stuff and then I stop doing it. I buy a ton of art supplies and then I stop creating art. Nobody says that. They say, I'm an artist. I paint every week, whatever that is. And you let that go and you go, oh, right on. That's who I really am. Let me fit the puzzles in to make that more of a reality in my life. And I'm going to do that because I listen to Sid's podcast. I'm going to do that in a way that doesn't even feel real for me because I've been so used to diets, but I'm just going to try this because I'm freaking tired of dieting. And then you do it. And you start and you go, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen to do a stalk of celery. This is making no difference. Oh, but wait, I've been doing this for 2 weeks now and I can do something every day. And before I wasn't doing something every day. Before I wasn't thinking about anything. And when you consider that thinking about something is a total act, well, I'm not only eating a stalk of celery, but I'm actually thinking about my health and nourishing myself because I'm thinking about just by the fact that I'm thinking about myself. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. One last point. it comes back to the conversation that I was saying, like the hypothetical, you know, the fictional conversation of our body saying, you know, I treat you this well. It's like when you eat well, it's not going to make you, I just want to be clear, it's not going to make you run faster. It's not going to make you run farther. It's not going to make you climb higher or do anything. It's not going to make you do those things. But if you do those things and you feed your body well, it's going to allow you to do the physical work that you're asking your body to do in a way that's less stressful. But that could be even, you know, if you're an engineer or a mathematician, it's like the how you think. Eating well isn't going to make you better at math, but it's going to make you able to think clearer and able to sustain, you know, work in a way that's not going to break you down as fast. It is a foundation. I know I'm off topic, but you know, that's what it is. But it's going to make you, I just keep driving this point home because people like diet is always the last bastion. I've tried everything else, tried every drug. Now I'm going to try to change my diet. That's the first thing. That's the first thing that you should try. I go to an acupuncturist to fix my back. First thing you do is give your body the tools that it needs to do its job well. And how do you do that? By easing your way in and finding a way that is works for you, that it does not add stress to your life. It may not be stressful for you to eat huge salads right out of the chute. If not, and you can sustain that every day, do it. That's why I don't put my job with my clients is to figure out what they're ready for. That's it. You can do that yourself. Find out what you're ready for. Test the waters. If you listen to my podcast on perfection, if you try something and it's too much, back off. There's no failure. You're in it. You're in the practice, man. You're taking action. You've chosen to make change. If you try something that doesn't last, back away from it. If you try four stalks of celery and that's too much for you, go to one stalk. There's no failure there. You're figuring stuff out with a person in that's already in you that is waiting to come out, and you're just making it easy as possible for that person to come out. If you stress that person out, it's going to hide back in the nether regions. Now, I'm over here with a flat stomach and totally healthy, but you're not helping me come out because you're making me do a cleanse now. And that's just, I don't even want to do that. That's not part of who I am. I'm not a cleanse guy. That's your body talking. Does your body sound like that? That's all I got this week. You know, that's all I got. But I hope it's enough to keep you sustained until the following week. And until then, I have to make a correction. I think I mentioned that 71 countries are listening to this podcast. I did not read that correctly, but it's 49. And I thought that was pretty good. Okay. You guys, can you be supportive? Why are you 49 countries, people in 49 countries. And I think I said something about Germany. Luckily, Germany is one of those countries that's listening to me. I mean, the whole damn country. Isn't that amazing? Until next week, think about this stuff. If you're not ready to take this stuff on and you're not ready to make small step changes, it's okay. Start thinking about it. If you think about it just right now, you're on your way. Just thinking about it, you're on your way. Because the only way, I've said it before, the only way for us to negotiate the modern world is to come in it aware and attentive. If you let yourself go into the world without thinking, without being aware, you're going to get bounced around like a pinball machine, from one thing to another. And that's the yo-yo diet, and that's all that stuff I talk about. You're going to get bounced around. That's technology. But if you come at all these things as an aware as much as you can, I hate the word mindful. It's like so overused now, but aware and attentive. And you come at the world like that, then you're not going to be bounced around. You're going to be in charge. You're going to be in charge of where you go and when you go there. That's the ultimate power. And that's why this podcast is subversive, because you don't need to be beholden to advertising. When you're liberated from advertising, that's just, you know, then you're going to see. And then you're going to see how little you have to actually consider your health and happiness when you get to that point where you're liberated. And nobody ever gets to the point 100%. Nobody. But it's that path along the way. All right? I'll leave you there. Until next week, small step it. All right? And I'll see you in a week. Be well.
always something, always waiting. Always crawling to the next thing, always, always crawling to the next thing that will bear us out. And all this looking's got me tired, and all this dreaming, it is wearing me out, and I am seeing myself as a bit of a whiner and a bit of a flyer.